You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. And for the rest of the hour, fasten those seatbelts, because we're going to be talking about something so strange that when you hear about it, you assume that it must be science fiction. And you know, you're not alone, because when scientists first talked about it over 50 years ago, even Albert Einstein, when he talked about it, called it spooky action at a distance. And it has to do with the mind-boggling world of quantum physics, where just about everything and anything is possible. Quantum theory allows, even requires, that two or more particles can be entangled. Now, what do I mean by that? That means if you twist one of them, the other one twists also. Even though they are not visibly connected, or even if the particles can't sort of see each other, when you twist one, the other one reacts when they're entangled. And the particles don't need to be right there next to each other. They might be at the opposite ends of the universe. Think about that. Twist one, the other will twist instantaneously billions of miles, billions of light years away. How can this happen? It's hard to believe. It is called spooky action at a distance, and now you know why. Even Einstein wondered about it. How do you test something like this? How do you, you know, test, does it really work? Why not try to move? You take two adjacent entangled particles and move them further and further apart and see if it works. Well, this week in the journal Science, researchers from Austria described how they observed two entangled particles on opposite banks of the Danube River, acting as if they knew what the other particle was doing, proving at least that far apart, spooky action at a distance. Is this more than just a physics parlor trick? Some say it's a crucial step towards super-fast quantum computers, unbreakable codes for secure communications, even teleportation. Wow, Star Trek stuff. Let's see how real that can be. Joining me to help explain the meaning of this discovery is Seth Lloyd, a professor of mechanical engineering at MIT in Cambridge. He joins us from member station WBUR in Boston. Welcome back to the program, Dr. Lloyd.
Hi, Ira.
Did I get any of that right?
Wow, it sounded wacky to me.
But basically, that is entanglement, right? When you do one, tell us about entanglement.
Yeah, entanglement, you're quite right, Ira. Entanglement is spooky. And you're also right that not only is it spooky, it's really potentially really useful as well. Entanglement occurs when you have two quantum systems, like two photons or particles of light, and each one knows more about the other, has more information than anybody has a right to know about anybody else.
And they could be stretched billions of miles away and still know about the other one?
Yep, absolutely. Well, yeah, they retain that information, they retain that knowledge as long as they don't get messed up somewhere along the way.
But doesn't that sort of violate the speed of light, you know, that things can't travel instantaneously, the knowledge about the other particle?
Well, no information is actually traveling between these two particles. What happens is, if we apply our relatively feeble classical intuitions, it seems as if one particle is responding instantaneously to the other. But in fact, they're just doing what comes naturally in a quantum mechanical fashion, in a way that looks as if one particle responds instantaneously to what we do to the other.
So it's sort of like telepathy I mentioned before.
Yeah, it is telepathy, and there have been every now and then a famous physicist who's lost it will say, well, telepathy is based on quantum entanglement. But so far, we haven't been able to make any connection.
All right. Tell us about this experiment on the Danube. Is this somebody has a summer vacation idea? What is this about?
Well, gosh, I wouldn't mind being on the bank of the Danube eating a Zuckertort or eating some Wiener Schnitzel right now. But yeah, the idea was to set up entanglement on both branches of the Danube. The parties between whom entanglement is normally set up are traditionally called Alice and Bob, or maybe in this case they should be Alice and Robert or something like that. And the idea was that halfway in between, or actually closer to Bob than to Alice, you take a laser, you zap a nonlinear crystal, and each photon, each particle of the light coming from the laser has a chance of being converted into two particles. One of those photons that's produced by the laser goes to Alice, the other goes to Bob, and those two photons are entangled. They know more about each other than anybody has a right to, more than any sibling, sister, or husband and wife.
And so if you tweak one of them, the other one tweaks also, even though it's not there. You twist turn it or something.
Yeah, well, what happens is, in the experiment, you can choose to measure which way the photon is polarized. Polarization is the direction in which the photon is wiggling.
Right.
So a photon that's vertically polarized is wiggling up and down, and a photon that's horizontally polarized is wiggling back and forth. And you can also have a photon that's diagonally polarized, wiggling from top left to bottom right. Mm-hmm. And we actually, all of us, have seen such polarized photons. All you have to do is pop on your Ray-Bans, like our trendy Euro Alice and Euro Bob sitting on the banks of the Danube. If Alice puts on her Ray-Bans just straight up, she'll only see vertically polarized photons, photons that are wiggling up and down.
Right.
Same for Bob. So if Alice and Bob are both looking, are both sitting there, sipping their cafes and looking at the photons, these photons are correlated with each other. So if Alice sees a photon that's wiggling up and down, then Bob will see a photon that's wiggling up and down.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, if Alice turns her head to the side so she only sees a photon that's wiggling back and forth, and Bob turns his head to the side, then they'll both see the same photons at the same time. These photons are correlated. That's the essence of entanglement.
Mm-hmm. And so the Alice and Bob were set up on the opposite banks of the Danube for what reason? Just to get them further apart and test out how far you can move this entanglement idea?
Yeah, I think the idea was to entangle them while making sure they can't cheat on each other.
Uh-huh. So we know about Alice and Bob, don't we?
Yeah, Alice and Bob. Well, there's Eve and Charlie and Ted.
Ted would come. That's right. You beat me to that line.
Oh, sorry. And what about Carol? Where's she in all this?
Tune in tomorrow.
That's right. It's a real third man kind of story here. Alice and Bob don't have a direct line of sight between them. Mm-hmm. They're separated across the Danube. In between them are trees, birds, a railway line, things to prevent them from communicating directly. So they have no direct line of sight, so they can't cheat by signaling to each other, hey, you know, Alice says, I'm going to look at this next photon by turning my head diagonally and letting them go through my Ray-Bans that way.
Mm-hmm.
And where the spooky action at a distance seems to show up is that no matter which way Alice turns her head, then the photon on Bob's side will appear to respond. So if Bob turns his head the same way, he'll find his photon wiggling in the same direction.
Wow.
So it's as if somehow the information about which direction the photon is wiggling, up and down, back and forth, or diagonally, it's as if it were transmitted instantaneously to Bob.
Wow. Our listeners have already piqued their curiosity, so I'm going to put them on and interview you instead of me. So my voice is... No. Let's go to John in Rochester. Hi, John. You have the logical next question. Now, go ahead. John, are you there? Oh, well, John didn't want to ask that question. He was going to ask, is it possible then to use this in communication somehow? You know, if you can...
Well, it sounded like he actually needs some entanglement there. Yeah, entanglement is particularly very useful for communication. It's interesting because even though you can't use the entanglement to communicate, that is, when Alice turns her Ray-Bans to one side or another, it doesn't send a signal to Bob. You can use entangled photons to do quantum communications and also to do cryptographic communications. Because the photons that Alice is receiving, it's as if they're completely random. If you call wiggling back and forth 0 and you call wiggling up and down a 1, she's receiving a string of bits, zeros and ones, which look random but are in fact completely correlated with the bits that Bob is receiving. Mm-hmm. So it's as if they have a shared random message, which can be used for a code, an unbreakable code to send information between them.
Wow. I don't think the physicists originally thought about this, did they? Think about things like this?
No, in fact, I seem to recall in Orson Welles' movies set in Vienna as well that spies have been worried about codes for a long time. Essentially, such a code is called a one-time pad. If Alice takes her bits,
right.
Say the bits she wants to send, and adds them together to her secret code, and then sends those scrambled bits to Bob, if Bob just subtracts the bits from his code from the bits he receives, then he'll get the same message. But nobody who doesn't have that secret code, that secret message, sorry, the secret code that they've received, nobody can actually decipher it except Alice and Bob.
Talking about Alice and Bob and other quantum mysteries this hour in Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. How practical, though? I mean, is this really a practical? Or is it just sort of, hey, you know, theoretically we could do something like this?
Well, Ira, that's a good question. I mean, a few years ago, this was not very practical. But as this experiment shows, it's really quite practical to distribute entanglement over pretty long distances. These Alice and Bob were 600 meters apart, and the setup was, in some sense, relatively crude. Their laser for the source was powered by a generator. It was just sitting out in the middle of a field. They didn't use particularly state-of-the-art telescopes or things to collect the photons and give them to Alice and Bob. In fact, if you compare this with what you would need to do to distribute entanglement from Earth to a satellite, they did a great job, and you could probably, using a very similar sort of setup, distribute entangled photons from Earth up to a satellite up hundreds of miles above us in space.
Let me see if I can get a quick question in here, because there's a good one coming in from, I think it's Laurie in Nashville. Hi, Laurie, quickly.
Hi. I understand that. Thank you for taking my call. I understand that you're being figurative in saying that these two particles know a lot about each other, but exactly what is this knowledge? You know, like, what are you representing by calling it that?
Yeah, that's you're right. I'm not sure what photons know, but I do know that we don't know what they know.
Photons. All right, they were back in that mystery spooky world.
You could say that they possess a kind of secret information that's shared only between them. They both have information in the form of bits, you know, of polarization, photons wiggling right to left or up and down. That's a bit of information. And yet their bits are perfectly correlated no matter which way you look at them. So if they put their Ray-Ban so they look at photons that are wiggling diagonally, then Alice and Bob's photons will be perfectly correlated. So they possess information, a kind of quantum information,
right, which
is not classical and allows these kinds of correlations, mutually shared information that's illegal classically.
Mm-hmm. If you change something about Alice, will Bob know what that is?
Yeah, it's a symmetric situation. So, in fact, Bob could also wiggle his photons or change the angle that he's looking at the photons through his Ray-Bans, and this would change the form of the correlations between Alice and Bob. Mm.
And this is happening, as you say, which makes it really spooky to me, without any exchange of information between the two.
Right. It's, you know, we're very accustomed to things being correlated, to people sharing information. So, you know, you and I are talking over
right.
the phone, and then we're sharing information with lots of other people around the country. So we're correlated with each other. But entanglement means being more correlated, having more information than you and I could share with each other. And some of these photons, simple though they are, they share more information than you and I can share.
Does anybody understand what it is? They just know that it happens.
Yeah, nobody has a good intuition for this kind of thing. Quantum mechanics is famously weird. And we lose our intuition for it roughly when we're, I think, about 3 months old, at the time when we learn how to play peekaboo, I'd say.
What was it Richard Feynman who said, anybody tells you why, if they understand it, they're lying? They just know that it works.
Right. That's right. But, you know, it's weird, but it really is potentially useful. The other use for it is this, as you said, teleportation. If Alice and Bob have these entangled photons, then Bob can teleport quantum information to Alice. He can decompose, say, another photon that he has, make a measurement on his part of the entangled pair along with his photon, then send some classical information to Alice that allows her to reproduce Bob's photon at the far side.
Wow.
And this sounds crazy, but it's been done in the laboratory, and these experiments indicate that you could do it at least across the Danube, and you might be able to do it from Earth up to space and from space back again.
Well, as they say in the movies, we'll have to take that up in our next adventure. Tune in later for more adventures of Alice and Bob and quantum mechanics. Thank you very much for talking with us, Seth.
Thank you, Ira.
Seth Lloyd, professor of mechanical engineering at MIT in Cambridge. Spooky action at a distance. Kevin Wade is our technical director. Our audio engineers are Matt Galick and Paul Masiello in New York, Matt Odette and Glenn Alexander in Boston, Mark Turkus and Chuck Jutris in Toronto. Greg Smith composed our theme music. And we had help today from Kim Oleski and Alphonse Vinh. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.